Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Happy Football Friday, everybody. How's it going? This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn at McGinn Headquarters for another Packers podcast. And Bob, the real games begin here in 48 hours. What do you think?
Thank God, huh, Tyler?
Get rid
of the garbage.
I kind of want two or three more preseason games. They're a lot of fun, aren't they?
They're the most contrived stories in the world, aren't you? Isn't it? You know, you watch that first quarter, you write meaningful stuff, man.
Well, I agree with you. It's time to get into the real deal. The 49ers coming to town. You could really look at this game as the NFC showdown of the week. I mean, two teams who could legitimately go to the Super Bowl here. Bobby did a lot of good stuff this week talking to scouts about this matchup. But before we get to that, I think we have to talk about the column that you wrote in our preview section that ran Wednesday. It got a lot of reaction from readers, understandably so. Can you just tell us what you're getting at there? And it sounds like you're not too optimistic about the Packers this season. I could be wrong here.
So I'm asked every year by our sports editor, Mike Davis, to give my views on the season. So I sit down on that Sunday, 7 days before, and try to formulate something after watching the team every day for 5-6 weeks. So you sit there for 3 hours, and you go plus and minus, and you go back and forth, and you look at strengths. You know, we're sports writers. We're not soothsayers. Or, you know, it's a column I really wish I sort of didn't have to write because people dote on what you predict, and we're not predictors. You know, we're sports writers. So I don't really like the assignment, but it has to be. And so I got him at 10-6, winning the division and being eliminated in the playoffs before the Super Bowl. They're a good team. I just think there's a few weaknesses, and it's all a shot in the dark, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think I'm raining on their parade and doing this and doing that.
Do you get some emails from readers?
Yeah, a lot. And I'll just remind them. I mean, last year at this time, I picked them to win the Super Bowl.
I remember that column you wrote last year. I mean, it was a much different tone.
Yeah, that's what I felt. And I'll also remind people that on December 12th, I wrote a column saying they were going to go 19-0. and that didn't quite happen 2 hours later when they went down in Kansas City, you know, so we're all just taking a stab at it. Don't get too worked up about it. A lot of people are, but it's kind of foolish to get worked up.
I thought you raised some really good points, though. I mean, this is a defense that's going to be relying on a lot of guys who are 24 years old or younger. A lot of guys who have never played a down in the regular season of the NFL. So, I mean, there's a lot of question marks on defense, which I guess that's the way Ted Thompson builds the team. That's the way he always has, and it's worked overall long-term for the health of the roster. But this is also a team that was 15-2 last year, that is contending, that has a quarterback in his prime. And instead of going out, you know, taking a chance at a veteran too, it's something that Ron Wolf did there in the mid-90s. I mean, he went out and signed some guys, and they went to a couple Super Bowls. Ted Thompson could have done that. He didn't. They draft a lot of players here who they're going to need very, very soon. Does that kind of play into your column, into, you know, maybe a little uncertainty with this team this year?
That's right. I mean, they're relying on three or four of these six rookie guys they drafted, you know, plus Desmond Moses off the CFA. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but when I looked at these draft picks, a lot of them could be real good players, but I just don't see that much immediate help right now as in impact, you know?
What's interesting, too, is Dom Capers recently brought up a good point that even Clay Matthews, somebody who may be a top five outside linebacker in the league, he said, look, Clay Matthews didn't start for us right away. I mean, it took him three games to really get going, and then he kind of took off. But you know, I think anybody kind of expecting Nick Perry, Jarrell Worthy, Mike Daniels, John McMillan to come in and just be these instant contributors that they may need them to be, it's probably not going to happen. There's going to be a lag there you'd have to expect.
Yep. Everybody has weaknesses, Tyler, you know? I mean, we could do the same exercise with the other 31 teams, and, you know, you find holes everywhere. I mean, Green Bay's got some here, there, and everywhere. I mean, they got a pretty good roster. They didn't overwhelm teams in the exhibition season like they had in other years. So, you know, I question the depth a little bit from that standpoint. But it's really a good team. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can win the Super Bowl. They're one of five or six teams, I'd say, that could win the darn thing. There's no question about it. I went 10-6, so whatever.
I mean, I got them in the Super Bowl for the reasons that you kind of hinted at there. I mean, this is still an offense that's loaded. You have Aaron Rodgers, a league MVP. All of his receivers are back. I think that has to count for a lot because that's just the way that the league's going. Now, that being said, you look at last year with the seasons that Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady all had, all record-breaking seasons, and none of them come out with a Super Bowl ring. I mean, do you have to be balanced, even with the direction the league's going? Do you have to be balanced? Do you have to have a good defense, a good running game to eventually come out on top?
You got to have a quarterback and you got to have a defense. I'm not sure about the running game, mm-hmm. you know? I'm just not sure.
Yeah. I mean, you look at that Super Bowl last year, what? There was a seventh-round pick and an undrafted guy at running back. So, now, I think that kind of segues into this week. You got a point here?
Let me mention one more thing. When I was working on the Super Bowl book on Chapter 46, this last game, right, the Giants and the Patriots, I interviewed three Giant people about it was two coaches and a player. I can't remember the exact blend. I talked to quite a few people from that game. And the Giants played Atlanta. They played Green Bay. They played at San Francisco. And they played the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And I asked those guys, who was the toughest opponent you faced? Without hesitation, they all said the 49ers.
That right?
Yeah. And that really made a mark on me. Mm-hmm. And that just told me, really, the San Francisco's a legitimate team. I took San Francisco to win the Super Bowl, so we'll see. Both teams, Green Bay and San Francisco, both improved. Green Bay's got the home field. They're favored by five, you know. They should get off to a good start. The 49ers are dangerous, though.
Alex Smith is their quarterback, though, Bob.
Yeah,
we were talking about quarterbacks being, you know, that important. I mean, can he win a Super Bowl? We're looking at your prediction right there.
Yeah, I guess I said he could. It's a real concern, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's not that good of a player. I like their D. I like their O-line, most of it. I like their depth at running back. You know, Manningham and Moss will help at receiver, and Vernon Davis was uncoverable down the stretch last year. So he's not Eli Manning. Alex Smith is not as good as Eli Manning. And I think the last eight or nine Super Bowls have been won by quarterbacks better than Alex Smith. So maybe he cannot do it. Maybe you're right.
Well, let's get into it.
Okay.
You talk to scouts. What are they telling you about San Francisco?
Physical team. They talk about defense first, you know. Let's just look at some of their players. I mean, Justin Smith, he's like the strongest guy in the league. And he's going to be up against T.J. Lang on Marshall Newhouse. And he's gonna play about 90% of the downs. He's gonna play with incredible power, relentless energy, will, drive. I mean, he is the real deal. He's like a guy from Denver 25 years ago, Rulon Jones, who played with amazing speed for about two or three speed power. I mean,
man, you're
explosiveness.
Old.
You're
old, Bob.
He reminds me of that. And the thing that Green Bay's left side of that line has to be worried about are these TEs, tackle end. The tackle goes first on a stunt, and the end loops around second. You got a penetrator, and you got a looper. In those playoffs last year against Jermon Bushrod of New Orleans and David Deal, the left tackle of the Giants, I'm sure a lot of you listeners remember this. I mean, Smith would just hammer. He would go first on the TE, and he would slam into that left tackle, and the left guard would have to go with him a little bit to occupy him. Otherwise, he'd just run over the left tackle. And he would just forklift at least one blocker, sometimes two, and then Alden Smith would just steam behind him as the looper. And they were just in on Drew Brees and Eli Manning time after time after time. I have no idea how Brees and Manning were so effective in those games. Yeah. I mean, they stood in there. Now, Aaron Rodgers can spin away from a lot of this stuff, right, Tyler?
Yeah. And the way that they're going to play Green Bay deep, I mean, they have to cover all these receivers. So is he going to have some opportunities to run? I mean, is that the way that Green Bay can kind of counterattack? You got to expect those corners to play a lot of press coverage. They're going to have those two safeties back. There's not going to be a lot of passing windows in this game. So Aaron Rodgers' scrambling ability, he's going to have to evade that rush and really do something.
Correct, and I'm sure he will. He's at the top of his game. Mike McCarthy talked about how physically strong and lean he is right now. Tom Silverstein wrote an illuminating story here 4 or 5 days ago about people that can run Aaron Rodgers down. I mean, you got Patrick Willis at inside backer. He'll play 100% of the downs. You know, he ran 4.39 coming out, so he's 4.49 right now. I mean, that is really fast. And Navarro Bowman ran 4.64 3 years ago. These are people, he's the nickel backer. They can chase Aaron down, and maybe that 9-yard game becomes 3 or 4.
Could be wrong, but I think that's going to be a big key early on in the game. Aaron Rodgers almost has to make San Francisco change it up defensively. I mean, you think back to, I think it was at San Diego, where the Chargers are doing a good job in the first half on Green Bay's receivers. I think Rodgers had like 50 or 60 rushing yards in the first half, forced them to change it up, and then that passing game opened up, and then some of those lanes that he wants to throw and opened up.
Yeah.
Could that be a case here, or do you think San Francisco is going to keep doing their thing and give Green Bay some problems?
They're hard to run on, you know? I mean, they're really tough. Green Bay is going to go 3 wide, and at times the Niners are going to sit in their base. They're going to keep Sopa Aga, their big nose tackle, on the field, you know? And then they can walk out a linebacker to cover that third receiver, maybe it's Driver or Jones, something like that. They're tough to run on. I kind of see a low-scoring game. I just do.
Yeah, I do too.
I think Green Bay's defense is improved. How much, I don't know, but they should be totally emotionally up. The opener's the best game of the year, Tyler. I love the opener, you know. These coaches are like caged animals. I mean, you and I are like caged animals. I mean, you've been sitting around for 8 months, and they haven't shown anything, and they've had to put a governor on everything, and they hold it back, and they hold it back, and now it's just like the genie's out of the bottle. And these openers are so unpredictable. You haven't seen anything, you know. And you don't know. And a lot of games by after the first month are just kind of mechanical, routinized, scripted. They know what's coming. And this is the Wild West here.
What are some of the craziest things you've seen in season openers?
When the St. Louis Rams, the first game in their history, defeated Green Bay here in 95. Green Bay was, I don't know, 10 or 12 point favorite. They had Gary Brown, who either played left tackle or came in at left tackle, and he got drilled by the Rams pass rush. The Rams won that game. What a shock. I remember in the late 80s, there was a drive around here called Operation Quick Start, kind of a civic booster group trying to push some bad Packer teams into having some success. And they weren't exactly Operation Quick Start. Houston Oilers, I think, bombed Green Bay in the opener here 1 year, and the Raiders did it the next year. Those are the lean years.
Boy, one that stands out to me, the Ray Rhodes era. I think we talked a little bit about that at our last podcast. But that opener, the Raiders game, right? That was the season opener. That comeback that Brett Favre had. Do you remember that? I mean, I was just a kid watching it. But, I mean, you covered it. What was that like?
I mean, those first 3 or 4 games that year, they were all victories. It was phenomenal comebacks by Favre. And he cried after one of them. And it was just great stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And then one more to talk about. The year that they had to pass the renovations here at Lambeau Field, they had a big celebration for the opener against the Vikings, and they lost. Really ugly game. Do you remember that at all? I mean, I don't know if it was you or Tom I was talking to. I mean, that kind of affected. They had to vote that in Brown County to pass it, and things weren't exactly all positive at that time.
Right.
It was a close vote.
And then the next game before the vote was at Buffalo, and they got beat there to start 0-2. So that would be 2000, I think.
Okay, I got my seasons mixed up here, yeah.
And, boy, I mean, that didn't, you know, there was concern that that would affect the vote negatively. Who knows if it did. And it passed, the stadium renovation passed 52 to 48%, I believe. Yeah.
Right. And then it opened up on that Vikings game, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, hey, we're looking at this matchup here. Who's a key player, under-the-radar player, that I think could be a difference maker in this game?
For the Niners? Should we look both at teams. Or both? Well, I'll look at the Niners just because I got their depth chart in front of me here. Let's go to Anthony Davis. Yeah, let's talk about the two Davises, Anthony and Vernon. Anthony Davis is the big right tackle from Rutgers, first round pick in 2010. He's big. He can come off the ball and move people. He and Ryan Pickett will be a great, you know, two elephants banging. But Anthony Davis is he's kind of a cheap shot artist, according to scouts. He does a lot of pushing after he's a lot like Gazdar Cherilis of the Lions. And way too much extracurriculars. He kind of dotes on this stuff. He gets off his game. And the 49ers can't have that. Vernon Davis, he's had three dominant performances against the Niners. He's been unbelievable. This week, we're certainly going to see a lot of Charles Woodson on him.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy with cornerback safety ability. Vernon Davis is going to run away from A.J. Hawk. He's going to run away from a lot of safeties. This is where Woodson can really earn his salary and make enhance his Hall of Fame credentials. Vernon Davis is at the peak of his career, just like Aaron Rodgers, and Woodson's going to have to try to shut him down in many plays. Who do you see, Tyler?
Well, that's a great point right there. I mean, in the last time we saw Vernon Davis in the playoffs a year ago, I mean, he was the most dominant player on the field there. I mean, he really came into his own. Even with the additions that they brought in at wide receiver, it kind of all starts with him, right?
Yep.
So I guess for me, I kind of want to take a close look at the guy I just wrote about today, JerMichael Finley. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of him this summer. The concussion, the pulled thigh, but coaches say he came back in the nick of time. They think that he got enough work in. But it's interesting, these last three seasons heading into the regular season, he was dominant in the preseason. I mean, he had a lot of big plays, I think 350 yards or something was in the story, but you know, one reception this preseason, one game, not a lot of work with Aaron Rodgers. Right when he came back from his last injury, you could see Rodgers really going to him a lot during practice. So maybe there could be an adjustment there. But everybody's kind of forgetting about Finley. I mean, he just hasn't been around a lot. He can still be that dynamic playmaker, that matchup nightmare where you saw what Jordy Nelson did last year. Could defenses be paying a little more attention to Nelson? I mean, how does that affect things defensively with Jennings, Nelson, Finley?
I agree with you all the way on Finley kind of being an afterthought right now.
Yeah.
Can you imagine JerMichael Finley as an afterthought? But that's kind of the way it's evolved right now.
Everybody's kind of forgetting about him.
Yeah, and everybody's on Nelson. I mean, we've written about him, you know, a lot. In my Q&A I did with Mike McCarthy on Tuesday, which will be in Sunday's paper and online, he talked about Nelson having a camp comparable to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's at that point in his career. The Niners, they know all this stuff. They see this on tape. You have to do things with Jordy Nelson or he will kill you.
Yeah.
So this leaves stuff open for Finley in the middle. It does.
I think there's something to be said for his whole plan this year to quote-unquote freestyle. He doesn't want to overthink this year. And he says he doesn't want to have that feeling he had all last year. Coming off that torn meniscus, it was on his mind. He had 13 drops. There's only one ball to go around all these receivers. He said in 09 and at the start of 2010 that he wasn't thinking a lot. He wasn't listening to anybody. He was just doing his thing. I don't think when he says that, it can be kind of misinterpreted. You know, when I hear JerMichael say that kind of a thing, I don't see a selfish player who's all about himself. I see a guy who really just doesn't want to overthink things. He wants to go out there and just play. If he does, I mean, he could be a special player at tight end.
Yeah. He's a real lightning rod, isn't he, for fan comment, fan criticism.
13 drops will do that, too.
That's a very good point. That's a ridiculous number, and he's got to shape up, period.
Yeah, You're right. All right, moving forward here, I thought one thing I wanted to talk to you a little bit about here, you rank players 1 to 53 every year, and some interesting choices on your list this year that we can talk a little bit about. You know, how did this start for you, and when did you start doing this list? And just talk a little bit about how you came to this list this year.
Yeah, we started it mid to late 90s, I think it was. And it's not a lot of people misconstrue this, they mistake it. It's not the best players, 1 to 53. It's their importance to the team, you know, their value to the team. And that's based a lot of times, number one, it's based on their ability and how good they are. You got to know what, you know, who's playing well. Number two, are there any backups at their position? How important is the position they play? Who's behind them? What happens if they're lost? You know, okay, at tackle, Brian Bulaga goes down. Well, maybe Don Barclay has to play. Well, all right, that enhances Bulaga's value. I think I had Bulaga number four. Now, he's not the fourth best player on the team. There's no question he's not. And some people, you know, rip me for that. No, but in terms of value, I think he is fourth. I mean, if Bulaga goes down, I think he's the fourth least. Of all the people on that team that you want to go down, I think Bulaga is the fourth person you don't want to go down.
I agree. I get what you're going with there with these rankings. I mean, and he's, you look at the numbers too, he just doesn't give up pressures. He doesn't give up sacks. And there's kind of a tendency to think, oh, you know, the left tackle is by far the most important position on the offensive line. And it is really important, but the way teams rush the quarterback today, I mean, don't they have pass rushers just across the whole line? I mean, it's not necessarily Lawrence Taylor, that spot, blind side to the quarterback.
Right. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So I got Newhouse number 10 on here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If Newhouse goes down, if either tackle goes down, Lang figures to swing. All right. I still think left tackle is a little bit more valuable than right tackle.
Right.
Okay. But the reason Bulaga's 4 and Newhouse is 10 is Bulaga's a lot better player than Newhouse. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that factors into.
Yeah, and I see you have Jermichael Finley ahead of Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson.
Again, just because there's so many wide receivers. That's the only reason. I mean, if Jennings or Nelson go down, yeah, they're tremendous players. But you got Driver, Jones, and Cobb sitting there, you know.
Yeah.
And if Finley goes down, well, then there's a big drop-off to that backup, I think, DJ Williams.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, I remember, you know, Tom wrote a story about that. Does DJ Williams figure into the plans offensively for the Packers? Do they find a way to get him the ball? I mean, he's kind of used as an H-back. He's had a great training camp. But still, Finley is Finley. I can't see Williams taking too many snaps, too many opportunities from him.
I mean, I just don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't know. If Finley's hurt, yes, but I... And DJ will play, but I just can't. There's so many other people who can do more things with the ball than him, and Rodgers knows this, and he's great at you know, disseminating the ball, so distributing, I guess, is the word. I don't see that bigger role for DJ Williams. Maybe.
Well, let's get back to this game Sunday. Two very different teams. What kind of game should we expect to see? I was talking to TJ Lane the other day. He said that they want to start fast. They want to turn this into a track meet type of game where the San Francisco has to play at their style. You know what San Francisco is going to try to do? They're going to try to mud it down, run the ball, control that tempo. Which way does it go here?
Well, the last time we saw Green Bay's defense, they weren't very good, right? And they gave up a ton of points. So who's to say the Niners can't score a lot of points on these guys? There's nothing to say that they can't. I mean, Randy Moss can run by people. You know, if Sam Shields starts peaking, if Tremont Williams starts gambling, Woodson starts falling down, the pass rush gets stalemated. I mean, yeah, there's certainly a scenario where they could score a bunch. Throw off play action, Vernon Davis destroying people, the good balance with the run game. I mean, they can score a lot. So I hear what you're saying, but it's really
that's they did that to the Saints, I guess. I mean, Drew Brees almost passed for 500 yards.
But if Green Bay's defense is a lot better,
mm-hmm.
and if they're back to 2010 form, well, then I think the Niners are going to have trouble. Then you got people covering well. You got Tremont Williams back where he was. You got Woodson not missing tackles. You got Sam Shields back where he was in 2010. You got A.J. Hawk playing better. You got B.J. Raji, a better player. You know, you got all these guys who had some off years, and if they all come back to 2010, then the Niners have problems on offense.
I think they're probably pretty confident in Tremont Williams that he's going to get back at least close to where he needs to be. I mean, he wasn't the same player last year with the nerve damage and the shoulder. Everything we've seen at camp, I mean, he's in receivers' faces. He's doing what he wants to do, not against a team like San Francisco. I don't know how big of a factor that is, but for the season, that's a good sign. Now, yeah. At the other cornerback spot, as of the taping of this podcast, there's still no definite answers there.
How do you see it? I mean, you got Bush and you got Shields. What do you think, Tyler?
Well, shouldn't there – there probably will be some type of combination of both. I mean, you think back to the playoff game against the Giants. Right at the end of the year, Shields and Bush both were used in different packages. They're such different players. Jared Bush, they like him. He's a physical guy. I mean, great work ethic. Brings it out to the locker room. I mean, they like everything about this guy. They just don't know how he's going to be in man-to-man coverage. Has he improved in that area of his game? So I think Sam Shields, he's more athletic. He's faster. He's going to be in those situations, you would think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So, yeah, they probably both play, huh? Right. You know, right. Will Hayward play from scrimmage, would you think?
I don't know. I mean, he had his moments this summer. I remember you caught it early on in camp in those one-on-one drills where that drill so catered to the wide receiver and Hayward was making plays. And he was pretty good this summer, wouldn't
he
you say?
He has been, right. He's been fine.
Right, yeah. Well, Bob, what do you think? I mean, I know you don't want to give your prediction out quite yet, but what should people expect here Sunday?
I'm not picking any game, Tyler.
You're not picking a game?
No, you put down that score in the Sunday paper.
That's right.
No way.
You give us a little taste, though, usually.
I don't know. There's too much risk, not enough reward on that. I do my one soothsaying of the year on that column, that 10-6, Tyler. Then I'm out of the prediction business, okay?
All righty. Well, hey, I think that's going to do it for us here. But before we go, Bob, the new Super Bowl book, second edition, full of good stuff here. I mean, you've talked to coaches, you've talked to players, you've talked to scouts. And the new edition that came out this year has the Packers-Steelers Super Bowl in it, and then this last Patriots-Giants Super Bowl. Just tell the listeners a little bit about it.
And it also has New Orleans and the Saints. So the first book had 1-43, long, long, long stories on all the games. And now the second edition is hardcover as opposed to the soft cover on the first. This has 44, 45, and 46, including the Packers. Long, long, long stories. The Packer 40 Super Bowl 45 is the longest story in the book. Extremely lengthy interview with Mike McCarthy and a lot of other people. If anybody wants a personalized edition of this book, just send me an email at bmcginn@jrn.com. My wife, Pat, is kind of the marketing manager, and we will take care of you. You know, a lot of people, reviewers, have been very kind to this book when it came out. The new one's been out 2 weeks, so it's fresh. And a lot said it's the best Super Bowl book ever written. And most of these books, Tyler, you know, are picture books, you know, and which the text was not that important to them. But this is a totally different look at the Super Bowl. I know a lot of you have looked at this thing, and it just tries to be hardcore football.
I'm not just saying this because you're sitting right here, but just phenomenal stuff in here. And I like it because I think the tendency with Super Bowls is you see what you see on TV with the game. Certain plays are kind of immortalized, and you just have this vision for how each Super Bowl played out. But this book, I mean, you really go deep. You see the why and the how to those big plays and to those big moments.
A lot of people were really good to me, you know. It really gave me a lot of their time, and that's the key to the book. All their deep thoughts on what happened, why these plays occurred. You know, on every play you see, there's somebody good that made it happen good, and then there's somebody who got beat, and that's what it's all about, trying to find out both ends of it and find out who played well and who didn't. So it was a joy to write. It was a joy to interview. So personalized copy, bmcginn@journalsentinel.com, the ultimate Super Bowl book.
You heard it here, folks, and be sure to check our coverage online at jsonline.com. We'll be there Sunday at Lambeau Field, and hey, Bob, the real deal has begun, right?
Really fun. Yep, this is going to be a terrific game. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to be great. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next week.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.